headlines. Ukraine's capital is hit with new strikes on the 20th day of Russia's offensive as the two sides prepare for a new round of truce talks. An Indian court upholds a controversial ban on the hijab in classrooms amid renewed fears of discrimination against the Muslim minority. And Israeli forces shoot and kill three Palestinians in separate attacks across the occupied territories. Warm welcome to our studios near the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. New strikes hit Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, as Russia's military campaign enters its 20th day. Several areas, including two residential blocks, have been targeted. As you can see in these pictures, the attacks have set the buildings on fire. At least two people are confirmed dead. Russian forces have surrounded Kyiv from three directions and have been pounding the city and other cities with airstrikes and shelling. Russia's defense ministry says its forces are now in control of the entire Kherson region in the south. Meanwhile, the death toll from an airstrike on a TV tower in a northern city has risen to 19. Russian and Ukrainian negotiators are set to resume truce talks. The Ukrainian president has described the latest round on Monday as positive. Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia is already realizing that it won't achieve anything by war. Talks over the war in Ukraine have been held between the U.S. and China in Rome. Washington is reportedly concerned that Beijing is providing military support to Russia. Max Civilli has more.
On Monday, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and China's top foreign policy officer Yang Jiechi met in Rome to hold talks over the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. The meeting took place behind closed doors and went on for 7 hours. No information was given to the media about the outcome. China has so far sought to portray itself as a neutral actor in the Ukraine crisis. However, Washington fears Beijing's willingness to take Russia's side following claims by a senior U.S. official that Moscow has asked China for military assistance. At the end of the meeting, a U.S. senior administration officer said Sullivan warned the Chinese top diplomat about the unity of the United States and its allies and partners in their efforts to stop Russia.
We believe that the response promptly given from all NATO allies are fully adequate to dispel any possible doubts about the alliance's determination to take the necessary steps to ensure the security of its citizens and its democracies.
China has responded to the U.S., saying reports that Russia has asked Beijing for military assistance for its Ukraine campaign are U.S. disinformation. Talks over the conflict in Ukraine were also held in the Italian capital between U.S. officials and Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi's diplomatic advisers. According to some Italian media, Rome has so far played a minor role in the EU's management of the Ukraine crisis.
Italy always plays a minor role in all U.S. and NATO initiatives, even though its importance is crucial considering that 12,000 U.S. soldiers are deployed on our territory and some 100 nuclear missiles. Having said that, Italy is practically at war with Russia after sending weapons to Ukraine.
Meanwhile, Italy's health ministry announced Monday that around 35,000 Ukrainian refugees have arrived in the country so far. Most of them are women and children who have reached Italy through the border with Slovenia. Max Civilli, Rome.
At the UN, Russia has accused Ukrainian nationalists of planning false flag chemical attacks to put their blame on Moscow and to inflame the situation even further. The Russian envoy Vasily Nebenzia described armed nationalists in Ukraine as the main threat to civilians. He said the groups have been unleashing terror against their own compatriots by placing artilleries close to residential buildings, schools, and kindergartens. Nebenzia added the Ukrainian nationalists are openly flaunting the cruelty by posting videos showing the torture of captured Russian soldiers. He also criticized the UN for its silence on the crimes being committed by Kyiv in the Donbas region. Nebenzia said the Ukrainian military has killed more than 13,000 people in the region since 2014. Iran's foreign minister says the country supports any diplomatic efforts aimed at bringing an end to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. In a phone call with his Ukrainian counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdollahian underscored Iran's opposition to the war, whether it be in Ukraine, Afghanistan, or Yemen. He described as important the recent meeting between the top Ukrainian and Russian diplomats in Turkey and called for the continuation and intensification of the diplomatic endeavors. Amir Abdullahian pointed to Iran's dispatch of humanitarian aid for Ukrainian refugees on the Polish border, saying that Iran is also in coordination with Warsaw to station a Red Crescent medical team there. Dmytro Kuleba, for his part, appreciated Iran's stance and efforts, stressing that Kyiv seeks an end to the conflict. He also vowed that Ukraine would do its utmost to protect diplomatic ties, including those belonging to Iran. The court in India's southern state of Karnataka upholds a ban on hijab in schools amid fears of discrimination against the minority Muslim community. The court ruling says wearing the hijab is not an essential Islamic religious practice. The ruling comes weeks after statewide rival protests over the ban. The Muslim community there argues that girls have worn the hijab for decades, just as Hindus and Christians have observed their own symbols. But that has been met with a backlash from radical Hindu groups. Critics accuse authorities in Karnataka, which is ruled by the Hindu Nationalist Party, of seeking to drive a wedge between religious communities. India is home to some 200 million Muslims, and there are fears that such discrimination could spread to all parts of the country. We've asked London-based journalist and political commentator Sid Mohsen Abbas to share with us his assessment of the latest Indian court ruling against the hijab.
Part of a long litany of state-sponsored policies which target, discriminate, and basically treat Muslims as second-class citizens, essentially. What you've got is an Islamophobic establishment, the BJP, which rules the nation. You've got a leader of that nation who oversaw the Gujarat pogroms in which thousands of Muslims were murdered right under his watch without any kind of satisfactory comeback on that. You've seen the rise of cow killing. You know, individuals who are involved in the meat trade certainly can't operate anymore, and now there are lynchings that go on a regular basis without really any great pushback from the state. You've seen, of course, immigration laws which discriminate against Muslims as well. So what we're seeing here is really quite a deliberate attempt to erode Muslim status within a nation, as you say, which has such a large population, which is playing with fire.
Pakistan's main political religious party has held a press conference in the port city of Karachi on the new wave of Shia targeted killings in Pakistan. Muhammad Turi reports from Karachi.
Majlis-e-Wahdat-e-Muslimin is holding this emergency press conference after the same past patterns of Shia targeted killings emerge in the country, where killers either going scot-free or sectarian hate mongers are allowed to spread venom against Shia Muslims. Participants here say that the government of Prime Minister Imran Khan has miserably failed to make needed structural changes against hate-mongering to root out this threat from the society. After the recent carnage in Peshawar Mosque, Shia-targeted killings gained momentum in the port city of Karachi, where leaders of Shia communities Pasman e Azad Salman Haider was gunned down before his house, signalling another wave of Shia-targeted killing following the same decades-old patterns.
This press conference is about the start of new wave of targeted killings in Pakistan and the overall declining security situation in the country, which is evident that Khan administration at center has changed its priorities and cannot deliver on its promises. First in Quetta, then in Peshawar, and now targeted killing in Karachi. If enemy states are doing this, then where are our security institutions whose job is to safeguard Pakistani lives?
Participants of Salman Haider's funeral told Press TV that they do not feel secure on the streets anymore.
Imran Khan's government made promises to all Pakistanis to go against foreign-funded hate mongers and will implement National Action Plan in its full spirit to eradicate these sectarian elements from the country. But unfortunately, in the last 3 years, this government has done no implementation of the National Action Plan, and as a result, came this new wave of Shia-targeted killings across the country.
Shia Muslims have seen carnages in Pakistan over the last three decades. They believe it is the direct consequence of the Takfiri ideology promoted in Pakistan by certain regional states. Muhammad Turi, Karachi.
Israeli forces have killed three Palestinian youth hours apart as tensions run high across the occupied territories. 17-year-old Nader Rayan was shot dead during confrontations that took place at the Balata refugee camp east of Nablus. Three others were injured. Israeli forces have also killed another young Palestinian, alleging that he shot at a special force officer who was trying to arrest him in the Rahat area in Nagab. And the third victim was killed in a separate attack in Kalandia. From Ramallah, correspondent Mona Kandil has the details about the latest spate of violence in the occupied territories.
About three Palestinians were killed today in the occupied territories in three different incidents. The first in Balata refugee camp near Nablus, the second in the refugee camp of Qalandia near Ramallah, and the third in the town of Rahat in Al-Naqab, the Negev desert. Following the killing of those three Palestinians, Israeli military issued three statements claiming that the three operations were meant to arrest Palestinian suspects, whether in Nablus, in Qalandia, or even in Rahat, this town that was occupied by the Israelis in 1948. The Israelis said that in Nablus, the forces were confronted by the Palestinian youths who threw stones and rocks at the fully armed military forces. That's why Israeli forces opened fire, killing 17-year-old Nader Haytham Rayyam and wounding the three others. One of them is in serious condition.
UN bodies are warning of a catastrophe in Afghanistan amid widespread hunger and increasing malnutrition. Activists and charities say the situation in Ukraine must not be allowed to overshadow other crises around the world, including in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Bhagwan has more from Kabul.
The United Nations WFP has expressed concern about the situation of children in Afghanistan, announcing that acute malnutrition rates are high in 28 out of 34 provinces of the country. The UN body says 3.5 million Afghan children currently need nutrition treatment. The head of Indira Gandhi Children's Hospital believes this situation is due to cuts in global aid and mass poverty triggered by U.S. sanctions.
Due to poverty, most Afghan mothers can't afford enough nutrients at the time of pregnancy. When the mother herself suffers from undernutrition, the baby, of course, becomes malnourished. In addition to providing milk and nutrients, health bodies should also provide such families with some cash aid for a specific period of time so that the mother and children don't face malnourishment after recovering.
Some Afghan mothers also say they can't provide their babies with needed nutrition, as their entire families are going without food to eat.
I'm a widow. I can't afford a packet of flour to cook bread. My family members are going without food to eat. There is no male breadwinner in our household. This daughter of mine is malnourished, and I'm afraid the other children also become undernourished if this situation continues.
The UNHCR says that at the Antalya Diplomacy Forum, everyone agreed that in spite of the extreme gravity of the Ukraine situation, other crises, including that of Afghanistan, must not be forgotten. Afghans are also calling on Western powers not to ignore the crisis they caused in Afghanistan.
Western powers caused the situation in our country. They imposed the war and control everything here. Today they are shifting all attention to the Ukraine crisis. That is important, but what about Afghans' plight? They shouldn't forget poor and suffering Afghans.
Following the Taliban takeover, the U.S. froze some $9 billion in Afghan central bank assets and major funding to the country was halted. The developments affected lives across the country. The situation is still perilous in Afghanistan, where millions of lives depend on foreign aid. Afghan people are calling on world countries not to forget them and to continue their assistance to the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iran has announced that only those who received at least two doses of COVID vaccines are allowed to travel by private cars during the Persian New Year holidays. This comes as the sixth wave of the coronavirus has subsided, but health specialists and officials are worried about the Persian New Year holidays, which are just around the corner. Salman Khujuri has more.
With the Persian New Year, or Nowruz, being just around the corner in Iran, people are getting prepared to welcome the arrival of spring. This comes as the sixth wave of coronavirus in Iran appears to have been subsiding now. The official daily number of fatalities, which had stood at 241 on February 27th, fell to below 120 over the past couple of days. The Persian New Year, or Nowruz, arrives on March 21st. The Nowruz holidays are traditionally a time when Iranians travel and visit each other. But health officials are worried that the exchange of visits and travels during the Persian New Year will lead to a new wave of COVID-19 if health protocols are not fully observed.
In view of the special feature of the Omicron variant, we highly request people to keep wearing masks and observe social distancing. Although many of them have been vaccinated, wearing a mask is still an important measure, especially when they are visiting relatives and friends during Nowruz.
I think everyone should receive the third dose of vaccine. And if you want to be safe, we should postpone our visiting and travels to some other time. If we don't take Omicron seriously, the next wave will sweep across the country again.
According to official statistics, over 56 million Iranians have received the second jabs of vaccines, while over 24 million others have been vaccinated with the third shot. Under the travel rules released for Iran's third Nowruz with COVID-19, only those who have received at least two doses of vaccines are allowed to travel by their private cars across the country during the Persian New Year holidays. Otherwise, they will be fined. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
China is experiencing the worst outbreak of the coronavirus in 2 years, despite adhering to a zero COVID strategy. Nearly 5,300 new daily infections have triggered lockdowns in 13 cities, and several other cities are under partial lockdowns. A total of 30 million people are under stay-at-home orders. Jilin is the worst affected province with over 3,000 new daily cases. The northeastern province has ordered travel restrictions and started making makeshift quarantine facilities to curb the outbreak. Also, dozens of domestic flights have been canceled at airports in Beijing and Shanghai. Health officials say tighter restrictions could be on the way. The surge is due to the highly transmissible Omicron variant spreading across the country. And that is for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa, via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
He who asks questions cannot avoid the answers. A simple question.
Is Britain being run by a clown? If the rumours are true, that is the view of French President Emmanuel Macron, who was also reported by a satirical French magazine as having said that Johnson had the attitude of a vulgarian. These comments came to light after Macron objected to Johnson's decision to publicly tweet a letter containing a five-point plan to tackle the issue of migrants who use small boats to cross the English Channel, and specifically after the fatal sinking of one boat, costing at least 27 lives.
In a public statement, Macron explained, "I spoke with Prime Minister Johnson in a serious way. I continue to do that, as I do with all countries and all leaders. I am surprised by methods when they are not serious. We do not communicate from one leader to another by tweets and letters that we make public. Macron is alleged to have added privately, Bojo talks to me at full speed, everything is going fine, we have discussions like big people. And then he gives us a hard time, before or afterwards, in an inelegant way. It's always the same circus." Prime Minister Johnson's actions and Macron's responses have revealed the impact recent developments have had on Anglo-French relations. Macron has claimed Brexit was the starting point of what he called the Johnson circus, and claimed problems such as the petrol crisis that blighted Britain, plus other product shortages, arose from the UK's withdrawal from the EU. He added Johnson portrayed himself as the victim and France as the scapegoat, adding, "In private he says he's sorry to behave like this, but he says that he has to consider public opinion over everything else."
What are we to make of the trading of criticisms between President Macron and Prime Minister Johnson? And why can America no longer seem able to fix poor relations between European countries? Simple questions with important answers. And let's start with strong words from the former French ambassador, Sylvie Berman, who said Anglo-French relations haven't been this bad since the Battle of Waterloo. How does the public feel France and Britain are getting on? We put that to them here in central London. This is what they said.
I have no idea, I'm sorry.
Are you French? We're here in Westminster. Thank you for coming on.
It's five questions, then. Thanks for stopping.
Probably not the best person to ask.
Oh.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. Yeah. Question one. The former French ambassador says Anglo-French relations haven't been this bad since the Battle of Waterloo. How do you feel France and Britain are getting along?
Well, I think it would be better to answer your question in a way of, why don't we be sensible and step back and use statements-like approach? As an ordinary citizen, I'm distressed.
Not very well at all. I think they should stay their side of the channel.
I think there have been far worse periods in Anglo-French relations since the Battle of Waterloo. I mean, do you remember what happened in the World War II when we blew up half their navy in the Mediterranean? I think relations were a bit more sour then, but I'd say. It could be far worse.
I would say that France and Britain aren't quite as bad as the Battle of Waterloo, but it certainly seems like the situation's deteriorating. It would be good to have a bit more civility on both sides.
I wouldn't really know. I think we're not as strong as we used to be, as like a friendship, say, but I wouldn't know.
Well, it is clearly a deteriorating situation. That's for political reasons. President Macron's facing difficult elections in April. He sees political capital in picking a fight with the UK over Brexit, fish, migrants. And I don't think we're going to get any improvement until after those elections in April.
Since Waterloo? I have no idea.
He's probably not far wrong, actually, or she, if it's a lady ambassador. I think relations aren't good, but I think it's chiefly between the two at the top.
I think we're
we're getting along okay. I think it has been quite tense recently, but I don't think, like, COVID's not really helped that.
Yeah, while it's been a bit tense, it should get sorted in the next year and year and a half.
I'd say he's probably right. Not great. The submarine deal didn't help things.
Well, I think the relationship, there are tensions at the moment, and all I can really say is I hope that everybody really sort of able to come together to try and work through the relations. I think through the dialogue, I think we can get French-British relations back to a really good place.
As far as, you know, the public is concerned, I think we just have to wait and see how this fleshes out and, you know, give it more time before having any sort of substantial judgment towards it.
I don't know, you're asking the wrong person. That's not something I have an opinion on.
I know after Brexit it might be a little hard, but considering the situation, they are more helping. In this COVID as well situation, a bit supportive, I will say, yeah.
I think it's difficult to say at a political level, probably not too well, but I think generally the populations are very agreeable about those things.
President Macron has been reported as describing Boris Johnson as a clown. What does the public think of this sort of commentary and use of language?
Well, I think it's slanderous. Well, we don't go and elect their presidents over there. They shouldn't be involved in our presidents over here or prime ministers over here.
I'd say Boris has used far worse in the past.
I can't necessarily disagree with the sentiment, but I don't think it was productive in any way.
Well, I wouldn't call him a clown. I'm a big supporter for him.
President Macron seized political capital with the votes he's trying to attract from the nationalist side of the French electorate by attacking Boris Johnson.
I think that is kind of offensive.
I still believe that the rock underneath is that the two nations are more united than they are separated.
It's subjective. It's his own ideal, but he can, yeah, why not? He's a bit of a clown, but he's a funny guy.
I don't think it's a good example to set to others, especially the younger generation.
President Macron said that Boris Johnson was a clown. What do you think when people use language like that?
I've seen a lot of videos. They're quite funny, to be honest, but I think he's doing good with vaccine rollout and all of these things, so I think it's quite good. But it's bad, I think, to use clown, but the videos are quite funny.
Probably not clever, because it's, you know, you have to play the game.
I think all I want from language and diplomatic relations is people really sort of talking to each other respectfully.
It's a poor choice if you're saying something about a fellow international leader, even if it's behind closed doors, if that's true.
In my opinion, it's not really called for, even if Boris Johnson is a clown, which, you know, might be many people's opinion.
No, I like Boris Johnson. It's all everybody look after. I like Boris Johnson.
I think, yeah, on a certain level, I guess you have to use your words a little bit wiser. But I mean, I wouldn't massively disagree in that respect, to be honest.
Oh, definitely, it's not good. It's not good. They should not use such language against, you know, such great people. You are representing a country, and saying such language like a clown, it's certainly not look good for them as well.
I tend to agree with what Macron says.
Why can nobody, including America, seem to improve relations between England and France at the moment?
They haven't done for 1,000 years. Why do they expect it to be for the next 500? I don't think they will be improved.
I think the departure from the European Union says a lot. I think the French, they are particularly big players in the EU, and they weren't too happy when we left. I think Macron and Boris, they don't particularly see eye to eye ideologically, and there's a lot of obvious tensions that go with it.
Probably because Macron is worried about the rise of the far right in France and how that's developing a sort of French nationalism that he'll presumably want to try and emphasise his patriotism, get away from it a little bit. And over here, of course, there has been lots of mood towards patriotism as well, towards this sort of British nationalism and look how great we are, and nothing says Britain is superior quite like having an argument with the French.
Because we haven't got to those elections in April that will allow the watershed to happen. Either Macron will be back in which case he'll probably be far more relaxed with regard to the UK, or he'll be out and we'll be dealing with somebody else.
I think there's too much mistrust. I think if people talk more, then relationships will improve. I mean, that's how relationships always improve, rather than people just saying what they want to say and closing off to anything that's set up by the opposition, or by the opposite side, I should say.
I think because politics is quite selfish at the moment, so everyone's there's been a turn towards like nationalism, which I don't think helps relations with any countries.
Because we have a media that's built on tension, so civil discourse at the moment isn't being prioritised. It's more about making a slogan and getting a statement. So I think until we fix that, we're going to be in the same cycle.
I think it's the United States, it's concentrating on itself for now. So, and that's how it's going to be. The Biden administration has made it clear that our people first. So, yeah.
I think basically if people aren't getting along, then it shows that the people involved aren't very good at having open dialogue, aren't able to express themselves and communicate well. So if there's friction between our politicians and other countries, I think that it's a lack of communication skills.
France and Britain appear to have much in common. Both countries have similar populations, with France at 67 million and the UK numbering 67 million. Each has a similar gross domestic product, with the UK turning over in 2020 around $2.7 trillion and France $2.6 trillion. But these two countries have a surprisingly long record of fighting each other. Over the last 800 years, France and Britain have fought each other in at least 12 different wars. In total over this time, they have been at war for over 200 years, meaning they have fought each other for about one quarter of all the years since before the Middle Ages.
In the past, the United States would mediate in the affairs of Europe. But this time, if anything, America has made matters worse. Why does Washington seem so powerless in this situation?
Well, I don't know if they seem so powerless. Maybe they're just fed up of all the silly squabbles that we have over in Europe.
You see the United States withdrawing from all kinds of diplomatic affairs these days. I think they are trying to take a back seat in European affairs in a lot of ways.
Probably because President Joe Biden is focused on his domestic agenda, and after having had some unsuccessful foreign policy elements, I don't think he's eager to throw himself into a complex and hostile situation.
They got the presidents, we got prime minister. However, they've got loads of states and they all run off states. So if, say, Joe Biden wants to make a decision, it has to go through all the states before that decision can be made. So I think it brings their power down.
Well, you've got the leader of the free world is Joe Biden. He is a weak president in many ways.
It's probably not a bad thing if they are powerless at the moment, because they come in where they shouldn't have done far too often.
I don't know if Biden is particularly strong. I think he's having to deal with a lot, and I think America's quite a broken country at the moment due to Donald Trump.
They've got their own domestic problems, which, you know, Biden's trying to sort out, and they've reorientated themselves to the east.
I guess everyone's pretty powerless at the moment because they've got, you know, COVID lurking, and there's huge domestic policies, you know, at stake. There's a massive shortage of money, so you have to go backwards before you can go forwards, unfortunately.
Well, I think they're dealing with COVID, and there's intense pressure on the United States to get it right.
America, every country's got their own concerns right now, their own things they need to fix. Last thing they need to worry about is fixing somebody else's problems.
I mean, I feel like they need to sort their own stuff out before getting involved. I think, yeah, they've got their own issues, to be honest. And I don't think they're seen as maybe the best mediator at the moment in the world for that kind of thing.
I think it's not that weak right now, but it was when the Trump was there, so there were so many diplomatic, and there were so many,
gangs were forming, like we are supporting of Trump, we are supporting of those. But I think there were more hatred at that time. Now when Biden came, so I think it's being things are changing a little bit.
I think they've got their eye very firmly on Northern Ireland, and there's big problems possibly going to happen there. I hope not. But
with all these divisions, where are relations between the UK, France, Europe, and for that matter, America, heading in the long term?
Britain was very good on its own before, it'll be good in the future. America will be, and France will be as well. As long as they don't interfere with our politics and our justice system, then we'll all be getting on okay.
Because I think the relationship is strong and will stay strong, and these are all very minor inconveniences.
I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. Obviously, things are on a downwards turn at the moment, but I think that there are enough people who are committed towards a solution on this, despite the rhetoric, that things will calm, things will get a little bit better.
I'm not saying nothing bad's going to happen, but I think we're more going to stay independent than we used to be with Europe. We'll be more independent.
I think there are short-term problems. Obviously, the EU is still very bitter over the Brexit vote, but we're not coming back.
Well, I think that the presidents are going to change. So soon on after, the relationships are going to change, and I hope that it will be better than now. Yeah.
In the medium term, I'm not that worried. I'm even less worried in the long term. But I believe that as political entities and personalities change, that will return to an even keel. On the other hand, that's with France and Europe in general. Be interesting to see what the new Chancellor makes of us in Germany.
Hopefully for the better, I think. I think that each country needs to engage with their own people, but also with each other.
Maybe tension at the moment, but I think in 5 to 10 years' time, we'll all be looking back at this as a minor footnote.
It's a long, long walk, my friend. It's going to be a long walk. So, who knows?
Hopefully to something understandable, agreeable, civil.
I think that we're living in a world where there's a lot of new challenges, and I think these new challenges are also leading to divisions between other countries.
I don't think we're falling apart at all. I think maybe just better leadership in certain situations would improve, I guess, the forecast of that kind of stuff.
It's headed towards a better shaping of the world. Okay, and these are five major countries, if you see.
Well, I just hope everyone, I think, would hope it's just peaceful and people can just relearn how to reconnect and be a bit more agreeable, I think.
In my opinion, it's probably just going to get worse as global warming, especially global warming gets worse. I think that there'll be more call from the public for governments to be more self-serving rather than actually a more of a kind of global approach, which is probably what we need. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen.
Thank you so much. Have a very good afternoon.
Though President Macron said Johnson apologised privately for blaming France publicly about the Channel crossings and the food-related so-called sausage war, he also said of the UK, "It is sad to see a major country with which we could do huge numbers of things being led by a clown." Former French ambassador to the UK, Sylvie Berman, has also stated that relations between France and the UK were the worst they had been since the Battle of Waterloo hundreds of years ago.
Anglo-French relations are at a modern-day low, and no one appears able to de-escalate this ongoing exchange of insults. With America also unable to mediate, France and Britain are left to battle it out in a very public dispute where two premiers treat each other as a scapegoat and a clown. No shots will be fired, but it appears both sides are rerunning their own version of the Battle of Waterloo. Though, in public relations terms, at this stage, the outcome, namely who will win, is very much in doubt.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human beings and we are looking at their rights. And there is no one better to tell us about the rights of human beings than the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salamullah. We began looking at the letter written by Amir al-Mu'mineen to his commander, Malik al-Ashtar, when he sent him as a governor to Egypt. Now, we are looking in this letter and we're trying to derive all the human right lessons and all the rules and regulations that need to be applied in humanity as a whole and in society for us to be a better people. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen, when he's giving this letter to Malik, because Malik now is in a position of power, which means concepts like justice, concepts like freedom, poverty of people, the affairs of people, are all in the hands of the governor. People's right and their rights now are in the hands of their new governor. Now, how should a governor deal with his people? How should he maintain and provide his subjects and his people with their basic rights? So Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, from here, he's trying to give him direct instructions of how to deal with people in terms of human rights. He says to him, develop in your heart the feeling of love for people, and it will be the source of kindness and blessings to them. Now, generally speaking, human beings, one of the main things that we have in our hearts, that we interact with one another, is based on love. Love itself and compassion and kindness, it's a moving factor to create a stable society and a stable community. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says that kind of love, first and foremost, has to begin from authority itself. When the people realize that their governor or the authority that rules them is showing them love, kindness, and mercy, it's obviously not through words, rather through actions. I mean, how do I know that the prime minister or the president or the mayor or the governor of my city loves me? Through his actions, because I can't get to him, I can't make a phone call and say to him, do you love me? I mean, it's nonsense. But when I see that he provides services for the city, he builds roads, he creates infrastructure, he helps try to eradicate poverty and ignorance and try to create education and healthcare and try to better the situation of people, then I do understand that this person has compassion, that human rights are being met. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says to Malik, develop that love in your heart, where not just sit and say, well, I love my people. No, but show it to them in a form of actions. It means better their lives in a way that it is noticeable to them. So through that love, they can have love towards you as well by obviously being obedient to you. Let us take a break and then we come back.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Just before the break, we were looking at how Amir al-Mu'mineen instructing his commander Malik al-Ashtar to make sure that human rights are observed. And then he says to him, do not behave with them like a barbarian and do not appropriate that to yourself. Now, so either a governor or a person in authority, he shows love towards the people, obviously by showing them actions, by building for them, by giving them their rights, education, healthcare, and all the things that we mentioned, or vice versa. You see that sometimes when governments take place, in not only they do not provide for people, but they deprive people. So, for example, when a country or a system starts to create lots and lots of taxes, and they, for example, they bring up the rate of the currency high or the prices goes higher, then people suffer in return. They cannot live, they cannot maintain their livelihood. So Amir al-Mu'mineen says that's a barbarian act when your people are suffering, when they cannot, you know, meet their requirements, when they cannot provide for their families, when they cannot educate their kids, when they cannot cure their sick, then that's a barbarian act. And we can see this throughout the world right now, where there are governments which are barbarians in their nature, where people are suffering. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says, power, authority, it needs to show love in action by giving the people and not becoming barbarians. And then the Imam alayhi salam, he says, look at it from this perspective, that people themselves are either brothers in faith or equivalent in humanity. They're human beings. What gives me the right to come and take the rights of others and usurp them and take their money, take their land? Because the kings and the rulers at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen and even now governments, they come to people, either they tax them too much, they charge them too much taxes, or as some cases they take their land, they take their property, they close down their factories, and which means that the essence of humanity disappears. When I take the right of someone else, then there is no humanity left in me, because the person I'm dealing with, either he's a brother in my faith, we share the same faith, therefore I have to give him extra love and extra care, or at least I should look at him as another human being like me. In the same way I want to live, he wants to live. In the same way I want life to be easier for me and my kids, he wants his life to be easier for his kids. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he clearly highlights that fact. And that should be the point of human rights itself, that dealing with people, you either look at them as brothers in faith, which means you're good to them, or you look at them as human beings, and you should still be good to them either way. So in no case should we start to deprive people of their rights. And sadly, this is something that we are currently facing, is that we have systems in play that looks at people as servants, as machines, to create wealth for them while they enjoy the good life, and the majority of the people suffer, and millions of people are dying due to poverty and what have you. That should not happen. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he brings that to his commander Malik al-Ashtar. Inshallah, we will continue looking at human rights in this letter in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.